I read that you recently acquired some 85,000 baby teeth from an old World War II gunnery range in St. Louis. What's the story behind how you got those teeth, and what do baby teeth have to do anyway with your research?
To tell you how we acquire them, I have to go back in history a bit to 1958, a time when the United States and Soviet Union were engaged in a nuclear arms race and were testing nuclear weapons. A lot of people were very worried about not just nuclear war, but about the fallout from the bomb test. And a group of citizens and scientists in St. Louis conceived the baby tooth study, in which they collected 320,000 baby teeth from 1958 to 1970. And the purpose was to measure radioactive strontium-90 in baby teeth. And the study showed that as bomb testing went on, the levels of strontium-90 went up and up and up. And after President John F. Kennedy signed the test ban treaty in 1963 that banned all above-ground tests, it went down sharply. Our group in the late 90s began a study of the same kind of tooth study near nuclear reactors in the U.S. And one day, I got a phone call from one of the faculty there, and he said, Joe, we were out at a storage area, and we found some teeth. He said, Joe, I went back there. There are 85,000 baby teeth left over from this study. This is a gold mine for researchers.
So what did you do with it?
One thing that the original Washington University study did not do in the 60s was look at the question, what did atomic bomb tests do to people? How many people got cancer from bomb test fallout? So we decided as a group to conduct a series of cancer studies. We had to first see if we could identify these tooth donors who are baby boomers, you know, many of them around the age of 50, and to see if we could still measure the same strontium-90 in baby teeth accurately. We took 6,000 teeth, males from St. Louis, who were born in 1959, 60, and 61, who donated an incisor tooth and were not breastfed. And we did two things. First of all, we wrote health surveys to people who we found a current address for. And second, we asked the Missouri Health Department to search their death records over the last 30 years. And out of all that, we came up with 100 baby teeth from these tooth donors who have had cancer by age 50. We tested them in a laboratory for the same strontium-90. We also tested 200 teeth of healthy people, people who responded to our health survey and said, yes, this is my tooth, but I'm completely healthy. And what we found was staggering. We found that people who died of cancer have more than double the strontium-90 level in their teeth from fallout than healthy people.
Why baby teeth? I mean, I realize it's obviously easier to collect them over adult teeth, but why wouldn't adult teeth show similar results, or are you specifically interested in childhood exposure?
There's about four reasons. You gave the first two. Yes, first of all, baby teeth are easy to collect because you don't have to do any autopsies or biopsies or blood samples. Secondly, we look at baby teeth because, yes, we are more interested in the exposures earliest in life, which are far, far more severe than exposures to adults. The other reason we use baby teeth is that this strontium-90 sticks around for a long time. It has a half-life of 29 years. So even, you know, though these people are 50 years old, there's still strontium-90 detectable in there.
How does strontium-90 enter the body, and how does it affect the body?
That's a good question. Let's just take it from the beginning. An atomic bomb explodes above the desert in Nevada. Many, many Americans remember the massive fallout clouds. They look like big mushroom clouds. Within that cloud are tiny metal particles of more than 100 different radioactive chemicals, strontium-90 being one. The cloud is then carried by prevailing winds. And the fallout returned to Earth through precipitation and entered human bodies through the food chain. It rained into municipal water supplies, into pastures where cows graze. The strontium is chemically similar to calcium, and the body thinks it's calcium. So when you drink a glass of milk with strontium-90 in it, it goes right to the stomach. It very quickly goes into the bloodstream, and just as quickly attaches to bone and to teeth, which is just what calcium does, only calcium is healthy for the body. Strontium 90 is destructive. It is made up of highly unstable atoms that essentially bang around and break DNA bands and damage cells. In the case of strontium 90, it's especially harmful because it penetrates into the bone marrow. And in the bone marrow, the red and white blood cells that are the basis of the human immune system are formed, causing not just bone cancer or blood cancers, but essentially all cancers and even all immune diseases. It is a deadly chemical.
In your view, how important is this information in the context of the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which the United States has yet to ratify?
The results of this study showing that bomb fallout, even in relatively low doses, is very harmful to humans, is extremely important for the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. There are several reasons for this. Number one, without a test ban treaty, some countries may test weapons above the ground. Number two, even tests below the ground can and have leaked into the atmosphere and poison the environment with some of these chemicals. Knowing what happened in the past with some of these very misguided practices should teach us a lesson and should underline the need to pass a comprehensive test ban treaty which bans all nuclear tests above ground or below ground.
Joseph Mangano, I want to turn now from radiation exposure from nuclear bomb testing to the matter of nuclear power. Your organization has a project you call the Tooth Fairy Project, where you look at radiation hazards from nuclear power plants. What have you found from this research so far?
We found that close to nuclear plants, the levels of strontium 90 are considerably higher than areas far away. Number two, we found that levels are going up. Since the late 1980s, they've gone up about 50% as nuclear plants get older and are corroding more and emitting more radiation. And number three, we found the link with childhood cancer. We found that in counties closest to nuclear plants in New York and New Jersey, when strontium 90 in teeth went up, childhood cancer went up. When strontium 90 went down, childhood cancer went down.
Just how much radiation is released from nuclear reactors? As I understand it, the federal law obligates nuclear companies to measure emissions and report these to federal regulators, and these plants are passing the test. Their emissions are so low that there hasn't been an alarm sounded by federal regulators.
The amount of radiation produced in the typical nuclear reactor is extremely high, on the order of hundreds of Hiroshima bombs. Now, most of that radiation is contained and is stored as high-level nuclear waste. However, a proportion of it must be released routinely in order for the reactor to operate, and also there are accidental releases as well. They are relatively low dose. Again, we're not talking about levels like Chernobyl. However, these levels, even at a low dose, are harmful, especially to the fetus and the infant and the child, which are infinitely more susceptible to harm than adults are.
So as we try to move away from heavily polluting sources of energy into the atmosphere, those that generate greenhouse gases and particulates and such, there's now a bigger push for nuclear power. What's your feeling about nuclear power as a source of greener energy?
In this decade, with the greater awareness of global warming and the damage caused by greenhouse gases, the nuclear industry has seized on this to promote what it calls a nuclear revival. They call themselves clean, and they call their reactors emission-free because they don't emit carbon or carbon dioxide or greenhouse gases. I have a couple of comments on that. First of all, instead of greenhouse gases, nuclear reactors emit arguably an equally or much more deadly set of poisons, specifically the radioactive chemicals that we found in atomic bomb tests and now find in reactors. Number two, the concept of nuclear reactors not emitting greenhouse gases is false. Just because the reactors don't emit them doesn't mean the process of generating electricity from nuclear power plants has no greenhouse gases. You have to start by uranium mining, then uranium milling, and then uranium enrichment and purification. and transportation of the materials, there's quite a lot of greenhouse gases involved in generating that energy. So there are a couple of problems with the nukes are clean slogan.
So barring a nuclear accident, a meltdown or something, how is it the radiation gets from nuclear power plants into people's bodies?
They're emitted through stacks. They're like little smokestacks. Each reactor has them. Again, the nuclear power plant operators try their best to minimize the releases, but it is physically impossible to run a reactor without emitting some radiation. As a matter of fact, the federal government recognizes this, and they set what they call permissible limits of radiation. The federal government and the companies monitor how much is getting out, and the federal government's policy is if these emissions are below permissible levels, then the nuclear reactor can continue to operate and the officials declare the reactor to be safe and of no risk or danger to humans. Our approach and the approach of a number of other scientists has been, we don't know that. We can't make that presumption. That's a dangerous presumption. We first have to conduct the studies looking at how much gets out of the reactors, and that's our baby tooth study, and comparing it with local rates of cancer. Only by doing that can you draw that conclusion.
What tests have you conducted that show the effects of before and after a nuclear power plant closes?
We've done two studies which looked at 8 nuclear plants in the United States that were shut down permanently during the 1980s and the 1990s. And we took a look at the 2-year periods immediately before and immediately after shutdown. And we found that in the first 2 years after nuclear reactors shut, there was a very sharp plunge in the rate of infants that died, in the rate of children born with birth defects, and in the rate of children diagnosed with cancer.
When you say the rates plunged, what exactly are you talking about?
Typically, over a 2-year period, the infant death rates go down about 5 or 6%. We found a decline in these plants of 18%, which is triple. Typically, childhood cancer rates go up slowly by, say, 1% a year. We found in the first 2 years a decline of 25%. If you want to reduce childhood cancer, you know, near nuclear plants, according to our research, and of course it needs to be followed up, a quarter of them can be eliminated simply by closing the nuclear plant.
Why is this story so little told in the media?
This story is little told because it is a scientific story that has been politicized from the very beginning. You have to remember the origins of atomic energy in this country were in the 1940s, specifically to build an atomic bomb before the Nazi Germans did, to try to end World War II, which of course were used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan. Building these bombs and then the subsequent nuclear weapons race with the Soviet Union were matters of the utmost national security. Okay, there was no time to waste. There was a great fear that Hitler would develop an atomic bomb and use it. And there was a great fear that the Soviets would have superiority in nuclear weapons and use it. So as a result, during this period, a culture of secrecy was formed in which the primary goal was to, again, generate the bombs. And unfortunately, health and safety took a back seat. It became a secondary concern. It wasn't that the scientists were trying deliberately to harm workers or to harm people exposed to bomb fallout, but it was certainly not the number one concern. You take that culture of secrecy and you roll it forward a few years later. During the 1950s, during the time when many were very concerned that nuclear war was going to eliminate life on the planet, the government and industry began to push nuclear power to make electricity. They called it the peaceful atom. President Eisenhower gave a famous speech at the United Nations promoting the peaceful atom. And while nuclear power for making electricity was not an act of war, it still used the exact same process, the exact same set of radioactive chemicals in an atomic bomb. So the effort to, let's say, justify the nuclear weapons program was very much a part of pushing nuclear power.
We are about to embark on the construction of new nuclear plants. In your view, has the technology of these plants advanced to the point where you think they would be safe enough for public health.
There have been technological improvements, however. It's the same process. It's the same chemicals. It's the same poisons. And they are still, reactors are still operated by people, by humans that can commit human error, which is what caused the Three Mile Island and Chernobyl accidents. Therefore, the technology must be still considered dangerous, and especially at a time when other safer renewable sources such as solar and wind and geothermal are available.
Joseph Mangano is an epidemiologist and the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project in New York. Thank you so much, sir.
Oh, thank you.